is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba through the hour, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Want to talk with Zorba? It's easy. Call 1-800-462-7413. Along with your call, some research, Zorba, tell us.
Yes, we're going to talk about boxing and does it really cause brain injuries? It's a more popular sport than it has been in years.
Seems like a duh to me, but we'll find out more about it.
It's really not a duh. And CAT scans, are we taking too many of them? Are we causing cancer? Not only in young adults, but also in children, some interesting information on the radiation load that we are now giving to our bodies because of medical testing.
This one's been in the news. What's our recipe?
It's wonderful. Carmen's shrimp ceviche. It's delicious.
From Missouri listener Carmen Ujoa. That's coming up, 25 minutes or so from now. We have our medical myth buster. This one on motion sickness, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. Again, 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in Green Cove Springs, Florida. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
My son is wrestled in high school and junior high. Now he's in college wrestling, and he keeps getting a staph infection at least once or twice a year. And I was wondering what your advice would be to help him to prevent getting that other than good hygiene. Is there something else he can do? We've heard all the home remedies about washing in dial soap, using Celsum Blue, and none of that seems to help.
It's interesting. These, the infections that are spread, the most common is there's something called herpes gladiatorum. And herpes gladiatorum is the gladiator, that's where the word comes from, where they can get a herpetic infection, just like an infection of shingles or an infection in your mouth that can be spread from gladiator to gladiator, from wrestler to wrestler, as they would say, from this. And staph
with what, is the mouth close to mouth? They don't have mouth
to
mouth contact.
No, not at all. Not at all. It is spread from the fact that you have abrasions on the skin, and that the abrasions on the skin then can have bacteria or a virus in the abrasion, and then because you're pushing the skin onto the mat, just as you can picture, on the mat and rubbing the skin in the mat, or you're rubbing your skin against the other skin of the other wrestler, and they have a staph infection on them, and their skin is rubbing into you. You're pushing it literally into the skin, and they get these all the time, and they can become a problematic issue. How many of these has he had?
He's had one already this year. Last year he had it twice. And I think what you just said about having like an open area, maybe he had an acne or somewhere on his back or somewhere, and that's normally where he gets them. It's like if he has a spot on his back, it's been open, then the staph gets in there and it becomes this huge ball, then it turns into staph.
That is exactly the case. Let me ask you a little bit more. How often does he have these open areas? You know, are they common that he has on his back and so on?
Well, you know, with the season, he normally doesn't have until the season starts, and it's like his acne breaks out on his back, and then
okay,
then we have seemed to have a problem with the staph.
So that's it. So his portal of entry is he's got an acne zit. The zit then has a superficial infection from the acne bacteria. The staph gets in there and decides to blow up, and that'll be the issue. A couple of suggestions. Mm-hmm. First of all, there are a couple of ways you can treat it. He's taking what for his acne? Is he taking any antibiotics at all?
Yes, I got him on something like this. I think it's like erythromycin, something like that. He takes daily to help with that.
Okay, so that'll help a little bit. In other words, the erythromycin. I recommend that he get, there's an ointment, and it can be in an ointment form or a cream form, and it's called Bactrobam, Bactrobam. You cannot buy it over the counter. You need it as a prescription. And what this is it's highly effective against staph and strep. It's been approved by the FDA for the treatment of impetigo. And impetigo is a superficial skin infection that often occurs around the mouth. Very, very effective against staph and strep. And my recommendation is after he has a match, not after he does, you know, wrestling in a format, you know, where he's practicing, but a match, because that's the issue. And I would recommend that, especially on his back where this occurs, that he either put it on or he has somebody else put it on his back, and he do that for 3 or 4 doses. In other words, he does it for a day, twice a day. It's a very simple cream or ointment, either way you want it. And it'll reduce the chances that he will actually have a back infection from that. It's very effective. That's the treatment locally with this. Triple antibiotic ointment or cream that you can get, like Neosporin, will work. Not as effective, though. I'd recommend the prescription stuff.
Yeah, we bought a lot of that stuff, Neosporin.
It's stronger. Call your doctor up, Bactrobam.
Okay.
How old is your boy?
21.
Oh, 21, so he's a college wrestler.
Yes, sir. Oh, yeah, he wrestles on the Division II.
Is he good?
Yes, sir. I think so. He's undefeated so far this season.
Oh, cool. Undefeated. Yeah. Way to go.
He's Congratulations.
No. He's undefeated by the wrestler. We have to make sure he's undefeated by the staff.
Yes,
right?
Sir.
Well, don't let him be a pro wrestler, okay?
No, sir. That won't happen.
Thanks a lot for the call.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, we go from wrestling Zorba to boxing. You mentioned some info on the dangers or maybe lack of same of the sport of boxing.
Well, boxing, you know, it's a big issue. It used to be a Big Ten sport. It used to be very popular in places like Wisconsin. Wisconsin had a huge boxing following. They won the Big Ten for a number of years.
Right.
And then back in the late 50s, a boxer, a young college kid, got hit. He was in the coma for a month. Then he died. And basically, the sport died with
him.
I thought
the whole boxing sport was kind of on the decline. But you said you're partner's son is
Absolutely.
Taking up boxing.
My partner's son has decided to take up boxing.
Is this becoming more and more
Absolutely.
Popular?
He said, hey, a lot of my friends are doing it, and he goes, and he's got a coach, and he's going to try out for the Golden Gloves, and he goes, you can't believe how boxing is booming as a sport, especially among young men. So I thought, you know, I want to do some research on this and see where the injuries are, because my first thought is boxing, it's dangerous, and you're going to get punch drunk. And so I found an excellent article in the British Medical Journal that really was a review of all of the issues surrounding boxing. And it turns out that when you look at the neurological injuries, the brain injuries mm-hmm. that occur from boxing, that a lot of these injuries occurred in professional and semi-professional boxers back when they were doing it in the 30s and 40s. And they were doing it because they had to make money. So a lot of boxers in those times would set up stands at a local fair mm-hmm. and somebody would come up to the fair and they would say, I want to box with you. And they would get money, of course, if they knocked out the professional boxer, which they almost never did. And they would do, get this, 30 to 40 fights a day. 30 to 40 fights a day at the fair. And if they got injuries on the whole, and a lot of them were unsupervised fights, they would continue with them because they had to do this for a living. So some of them had 2,000 to 3,000 boxing bouts, if you will, in their career. Hmm. Well, the bottom line of the research shows, A, some people have a predisposition to certain neurological injuries, such as Parkinson's disease.
Oh, yeah.
So in other words, if you've got Parkinson's disease in your family, boxing is probably not the sport for you.
Isn't that what Muhammad Ali?
He now has Parkinson's disease.
Well,
he may have, and I don't know, he may have had the predisposition because he had the neurological predisposition, mm-hmm. and that appears to be the primary issue. It's people who have this genetic predisposition that tend to get the punch-drunk syndrome of that. Well, but from an amateur point of view, you've got to compare it to things like football and soccer, and they have neurological injuries.
Are you saying that boxing is not as harmful or not any more harmful than, say, football?
There is no evidence that I could find, and I scoured the medical literature, that boxing was any more harmful to the brain than football or soccer. And we know that hitting the ball, and we know that getting hit with a helmet in football has a danger to it. And boxing that is supervised appropriately, when a kid gets a concussion, follow the same rules that you do for football and soccer, and it appears to have, to me, my read, exactly the same safety data.
Hmm. Interesting. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Robinson, Illinois. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a question concerning, I'm currently enduring my third pregnancy, and I'm having issues with my sciatic. I had issues with my first two pregnancies, but really not until the last trimester, and it wasn't this painful. This problem that I'm having now seems to have started from the beginning, and now I'm in my last trimester and just dealing with a lot of pain.
There's evidence of your previous pregnancy nearby there.
do you hear? we may have a little background commotion, so I apologize early.
No, that's perfectly welcome. It's sad to hear you say enduring a pregnancy.
I hate to describe it that way because I love being pregnant. I'm one of those crazy women that wishes it was longer than 9 months. But unfortunately, this pregnancy has been painful, and since I already have two children that I'm constantly chasing around, it's been a little bit difficult.
Yes, and enduring then is the right word because, as you said, when you have pain and you're pregnant and you have children to take care of, it becomes a problematic issue. So what are you doing locally for the sciatica? What are you doing in terms of pillows?
Sleeping with the pillow in between my legs, laying
okay.
on my left side.
Good.
Have the pillow in between my legs.
Good.
I do some prenatal yoga.
Good. Excellent.
To try to alleviate that. And I've actually... someone recommended a chiropractor.
Okay, excellent.
Which I am a little funny about chiropractic medicine, but I did go to a visit last week, and it did seem to help a bit. But it's, I guess that's one of my main questions for you, is that really worth it? Because that is an out-of-pocket expense. You know, my insurance doesn't really cover that as much as I'd like it to, and it's going to be very expensive.
What did it cost you?
My first visit was $135.
Okay.
And then I have to meet a $300 deductible before my insurance is going to kick in.
So your insurance will kick in for chiropractic?
It will. I don't know exactly what the percentage is.
Okay. Well, the issue is doing care in a what we call local area externally to the body to help. So it means not sitting on a hard chair. Sitting on something called a donut will help some people. These donuts are little they look like life preservers. They're little round things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can be very, very useful. Will you bring your donut with you so that when you're sitting on a chair, you're sitting on a donut? It's very important, not just when you're sleeping, to make sure that you don't put pressure on the sciatic nerve because sometimes that will make things worse. So you want to make sure you're cushioned no matter where you are and no matter what you're doing.
Okay.
Then you want to look at local therapy in terms of massage and chiropractic. It may not be a chiropractor. It may be a massage therapist. For some people who have a flex spending account, they can then use their flex spending account for a massage therapist versus for a chiropractor. And once again, it's that local care in the area that does it. A heating pad can also be useful. And then over-the-counter Tylenol will help to some extent. And that's
okay.
really, Tylenol is okay. It's safe at 2,000 to 400 milligrams a day, depending on how much you drink. You're pregnant. You're not drinking alcohol. So you can go up to 3,000 to 4,000 milligrams a day.
Okay.
And that's about what you have to do. There's nothing else in terms of curing it. Yoga, though, is an excellent idea. I would keep up with the yoga,
okay.
with stretching. And some go to physical therapists. They just have a different way of looking at it. They'll give you different stretching exercises. It's finding the exercise that's right for you to relieve the pain and to work on it because the pain is going to be on and off during the pregnancy.
Right.
That's kind of what it tends to be. So.
Okay.
So you'd like to be pregnant for more than 9 months? Did I hear you say that?
I mean,
that's
rather
really interesting.
The hard work starts when the children are born.
Well, introduce us to your companion there before you go.
She's begging for food. This is my daughter,
Caroline.
And she is 18 months.
Oh, how
and
cute.
Then my son, Samuel, is 3 and a half. They're just 1 week shy of exactly 2 years apart.
Oh, how cool is
and
that?
And now this one will be here in about 3 months.
Well, he or she is going to be named?
If it's a boy, it will be Luke. And if it's a girl, it will be Catherine, I believe. Not real positive on the girl's name. So I'm kind of hoping for a boy.
Okay. Well, good luck with it. We won't hold you to the girl's name.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call. We really do appreciate it. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, we welcome a listener now in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi there.
What's up?
I guess I've got an unusual question. At least I feel it's unusual.
Mm-hmm.
I've been listening to you guys for a long time, and I've heard Zorba talk in the past about stage fright and to a degree anxiety and performance anxiety, things like that, and how they're treated with beta blockers. And I have a little different spin on that. Being from the Northwoods in Wisconsin here, I do pick up some recreational hunting and that kind of stuff. And I experience some amount of performance anxiety, but I guess with a little different spin to it. When I actually happen to have deer in front of me, I start to get the sweaty palms, the racing heart. And it gets actually so bad to the point where I have very, very difficult time actually steadying myself and aiming.
Now, is this, do you think, because you're so excited about being able to get your buck, or is this a kind of a should I be killing this animal or not sort of a feeling?
Well, no, I don't think it's equivocalness about the hunting or the sport in and of itself. I think it's more anxiety about actually participating in the hunt and being successful in it.
Uh-huh.
And I guess I used to have this in college when I went to college and I had test anxiety, performance anxiety when I would do testing. But I kind of got over that through repetition, more or less. And I guess at this point, it seems to be getting worse and worse as time goes on. What I do notice is that as I sit, the longer I sit, the more anticipation that I have, the worse the response.
Well, let me tell you what is actually going on. Because what's going on is you're there, the deer is there, the adrenaline is now pumping through your body. Adrenaline has does a lot of things. First of all, it increases the pulse, the blood pressure. It does a whole bunch of things physiologically in terms of your body, but it makes you ready to either fight or run. That's really what it does. And so when you all of a sudden have this extra blood and extra blood pressure there and this heightened awareness, it often translates into a shake. We normally have a tremor. We have a physiological tremor. We all have a tremor, and that tremor is exaggerated when we have adrenaline in our body. Now, if you're a violin player in a symphony orchestra, you're one of the probably 50% of all the violin players take a beta blocker before they play because they're up. They don't have a buck in front of them, but they have the conductor in front of them, and they have performance anxiety. It's interesting. Performance anxiety means multiple things within our culture, but they have performance anxiety.
What do you mean?
Performing. We don't talk. We don't say the word sex on public radio. Sex is taboo on public radio. Sex is taboo on public radio. Well, that's a different kind of performance anxiety, which is also part of this. But getting back, and so what happens is you're there and you're shaking because of the adrenaline that's in your body. What beta blockers do is they attenuate the pulse. That's what they do. So they do a few other things within the body, but what happens is the pulse goes out, the blood pressure goes up, not as high, and you're more likely to hold the gun. And what happens is you then become more comfortable with the fact that you're not going to have this happen. You're not going to have this, you know, this stage fright, because you know it's not going to occur. In other words, you can break the cycle. Now, in testing, you broke the cycle by you went to college and you had tests on a regular basis and you undoubtedly had a ritual. That's usually what people do. You know, I'm going to put on my special shirt and I'm going to get there early and I'm going to get my pens, right?
Exactly. And talk to yourself over and over.
Talk to yourself over and over, and you had a ritual. So if you went out and you started hunting, you know, deer all the time, which you can't do, you would get over that. You can get over that in terms of a habit and the fact that you're doing it all the time, or if you had to do it in order to provide for your family. But as a sport, you can't. So my recommendation before you go hunting, take a beta blocker. I mean, really, it'll work.
Okay.
And you take a beta blocker. And I have to tell you, a lot of people who have this when they hunt, they do things that are basically stupid. They don't take a beta blocker. They take a can of beer.
Yeah,
and they take alcohol because that stops the response, and that's a dumb, silly way of treating it because it's really not good to be shooting when you're drinking.
Exactly.
So beta blockers are much safer. I would take it, and you know that's a very simple way. And there's nothing wrong with taking a medication to help you through there. But as Tom said, you know, this is not fear over, you know, not fear over hurting the, you know, getting your Bambi. It's Bambi, right? No, it's a buck. I'm sorry.
It's not Bambi. It's Bambi father, maybe. Maybe. I don't know. It could be. It could be a neighbor, too.
Good luck. Beta blockers, my recommendation is Atenolol, Atenolol. It's longer acting. I think it works better than propranolol. 25 to 50 milligrams. Get it from your doctor. It'll work.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks. We appreciate the call. And Zorba, let's go to our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox now and see if we can help out P.A. Wade from Madison, Wisconsin, who writes, "For the past several years, I've had saliva flowing continuously in my mouth. I have to either swallow it or spit it out. And when I do that, it comes back the next second. Is there something I can do or take to stop the flow of saliva into my mouth? With the way it is now, I'd rather have dry mouth.
I'd rather have dry mouth instead of that. Well, there are a couple things you can do. First of all, there are a lot of issues involved in saliva going into the mouth. There are the issues of teeth, gums. Are they healthy? Does he have problems with his teeth or chronic infections such as that? You can have saliva in your mouth when you have sinus problems, mucus problems, allergy problems, anxiety problems. Anxiety can produce saliva in the mouth too. Are you chewing gum? So it's really not an easy question to answer. And there's a treatment with small doses of antidepressants such as nortriptyline, 10 milligrams daily, will dry up the mouth. Amitriptyline is even more effective, 5 or 10 milligrams a day. The side effect of that is a dry mouth, and for him, it may be a normal mouth. So a pill will work.
Interesting to me, as I was reading that, I felt the saliva.
Same thing. I was thinking the same thing.
You talk about saliva in the mouth.
I said it's psychological. I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking, how much saliva do I have in my mouth? Well, you're weird and I'm weird. That's all I can say. It's
I'm picturing tens of thousands of listeners.
That's
out
right.
There,
that's right. Swallowing with extra saliva in their mouth. There we go.
Keep your questions, comments, and tips coming. Just send them along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Do you think, Zorba, that our listeners' mouths will be salivating as they hear about Carmen's shrimp ceviche?
I think so, because my mouth is salivating now.
That's coming up. Our recipe, lots more too. More research, more of your calls, our medical myth buster on motion sickness, all on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. With Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. Do you have a question for Zorba? Why not give him a call? 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next caller, let's get our recipe taken care of here. This one from Crestwood, Missouri listener Carmen Ujoa. How did I do, Carmen, with that name? Okay.
You did very well, Tom.
Thank you. This is Carmen's shrimp ceviche. Now, I know Zorba, because he's a master chef, knows what ceviche is, but I don't. Tell us, Carmen, what is ceviche?
Well, ceviche is a traditional and very popular dish in Ecuador, which is my native country. Mm-hmm. And it's basically any seafood marinated in lime juice. And it comes in a number of variations and styles.
Any seafood, what, you cook it up and then put it in with lime juice?
Oh, well, not necessarily cooked. This recipe is cooked, but fish ceviche will be just marinated raw in lime juice.
Oh.
I've been to Ecuador. I've been to Quito. And what is the other big city in Ecuador?
Quito is the capital city, and then the Guayaquil is the port,
Guayaquil,
which is the largest.
Guayaquil.
City.
So I've been to both. I've had ceviche there. I never had ceviche before I went there, and I had 5 or 10 different kinds. I love it. I love it. It is just wonderful. So this is your family ceviche recipe?
Yes, it's a recipe that I developed over the years of being away from home. And I made it to my taste, and let me tell you, it's always very popular with my guests.
It's always very popular with your guests, so that is good. So
we're going to run through the ingredients, and Carmen, jump in whenever you want and correct us or add on to, okay?
Okay.
So we start out with one yellow onion medium.
a medium yellow onion.
Now, do you ever use red onions or white onions?
I do use both, either yellow or red onion are fine.
Okay. Five limes for juicing.
Five limes for juicing.
That's right. Now, I take it you only use fresh limes.
Yes.
You don't use lime juice
at
all.
Yes, I would not recommend to use the substitute. And also, I don't use lemon because limes are more acidic than lemons.
Oh, okay. So it gives, well, of course, there's a different taste between lemon and for
sure.
Lime. So it's more. 1.5 pounds of shrimp peeled and deveined.
1.5 pounds of shrimp peeled and deveined.
So these are a shrimp that are pre-cooked?
No. Raw shrimp.
Okay, raw shrimp. Okay, 1 can of whole tomatoes or 5 vine-ripened tomatoes that have been peeled.
A can of tomatoes or 5 real tomatoes.
That's right. No, so I take it that in the winter you tend to use canned tomatoes, in the summer you use real tomatoes?
Yes,
or?
That's correct.
Yeah,
and in the summertime when they are fresh, what I do is I drop them in boiling water and leave them like a minute. So it's easier to peel the skin off.
Absolutely. In fact, I remember many years ago I had a number of tomato bushes. We used to put up canned tomatoes all the time. It would be August, and it really, they're not hard. They're not hard to peel at all as long as you throw them in boiling water. And Tom knows that. He's big on peeling tomatoes, that when you throw a tomato in boiling water, the skin just sort of pops up, and it's really simple.
Whatever
right?
you say.
Whatever I say. Okay. Half teaspoon of sugar.
Half a little tea of sugar.
A large orange for juicing.
A large orange for juicing.
Okay, so you get a good orange, a juice orange, right?
Yeah, and if you don't find a large orange, you can use 2 small oranges.
2 small oranges. Mm-hmm. Okay, 2 tablespoonfuls of ketchup.
2 big tea ketchup.
Ketchup. A teaspoon of salt.
A little tea salt.
Now, do you use the next ingredient, a teaspoon of chili sauce? Is that what you like to use?
Yes, I do use that. And I know that some people don't like hot sauce. And some people do like more of hot sauce. So you can either don't use it or add another tablespoon of chili sauce, but not too much because you don't want to overpower the
Well, when the I'm taste. When I'm visiting you in Missouri and you're cooking this up for me, put a lot of the chili sauce
Absolutely.
In.
Okay, I'll do that.
Absolutely, that's exactly it. 2 tablespoonfuls of flat leaf parsley, finely chopped.
2 big tea flat leaf parsley, finely chopped.
That's right. Easy to get at the store these days. And 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
2 tablespoons of olive oil.
Now, I see in here that you say optional. Why is the olive oil optional?
Well, I use the olive oil mostly as a condiment. I just like the flavor of extra virgin olive oil. So if you are on a diet and you don't want to use the oil, or if you don't like the taste of the olive oil, it's perfectly fine if you don't use it at all.
Got you. So let's take this and put this together. Cut the onion in half and slice thinly. Place in a serving bowl and cover with the juice from the limes and let the onions and limes stand for at least 30 minutes. Now, can you let them stand for longer than 30 minutes, or is that about the right amount?
Yes, you can, up to an hour. What happens is that the lime juice softens the onion and takes away the raw taste.
Wow.
So, you do that while you're doing the other things of the recipe, that will be time enough. But, 1 hour.
So it takes away some of the bite and the raw taste of that. Meanwhile, cook the shrimp with 1 tablespoon of water in a small pot until pink. Just 2 to 3 minutes. Very important with shrimp not to overcook them. And that's that is the biggest issue. That is the biggest issue because if you overcook shrimp, then it becomes too firm and too mealy. Let them cool completely. You put them in cold water to let them cool, or you just let them sit
up? No, you just put them on the side on the stove.
Okay, so just on the side. Puree the tomatoes in a blender, then add sugar. Then add the shrimp with the liquid, the blended tomatoes, orange juice, ketchup, chili sauce, and salt to a serving bowl with the marinating onions. Then mix carefully, cover with plastic wrap, and refrigerate for at least 2 hours. How long can you leave it in the refrigerator?
I normally, if I'm going to have a guest, I will prepare in the morning and leave it, until we serve dinner.
So in other words, you can do it in the morning, have it, because I'm big on...
recommend to do it the previous day because it's seafood, so you normally have to eat the same day that you prepare it.
That's right. So the same day, but in the morning. Season to taste, then top with some parsley if you want to drizzle it with a little olive oil, extra virgin on the top. Mix it carefully and serve chilled. Oh, this is just dynamite.
It sounds good to me. Now, is this a meal, Carmen, or is this an appetizer, or what do you serve with this, if anything?
Well, you can ceviche by itself, for example, for a light lunch and perhaps with a side salad, mm-hmm. or I normally serve it as a first course for dinner. And in Ecuador, it is accompanied with slices of bread to suck up the juices.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also accompanied, and perhaps Zorba had it, with popcorn. And please do not use butter flavor.
I must have misunderstood. With popcorn?
Yes, with popcorn.
Shrimp? With popcorn?
Yeah, you just top it with a few kernels of popcorn popped. And also we use plantain chips.
Yes, and you know what? I had it when I was in Ecuador. I had it topped with popcorn, and I did have it topped with the plantain chips, which were really tasty, and it was delicious. And, you know, it's kind of fascinating. We don't put popcorn. We eat popcorn straight, but we don't use it on the top of soups in this country.
No, no.
But on the whole, when you think about it, why don't we start to use popcorn more? And when I was with my friend, and he first put popcorn on there, I said, "What are you doing with this?" He said, "Oh, that's how you eat it." And I thought, all right, that's how I'm going to eat it, but that's not how I normally eat my popcorn. This is a wonderful recipe. I know lots and lots of our listeners are going to write in for this recipe. It is dynamite. Thank you so much.
Well, it was my pleasure.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Carmen, and for sending us this winning recipe. Carmen gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
For today's recipe, send a stamped self-addressed business-sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
And if you want this recipe to go, just go to our website. You can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor on Your Health recipes. That's at zorbapastor.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And a line is open right now if you want to call us at 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, this is a little embarrassing, but I know I'm probably not the only one, so I thought somebody ought to step up to the plate. It has to do with gas. I may be one of the most gassy men on the planet. And I'm not talking about people who burp either.
Okay. We get it. You eat a lot of beans?
No, no. You know, it's a normal diet. A lot of vegetables, maybe. But even if I don't, I mean, it's just always. And, of course, my wife's always yelling at me. My kids are always yelling at me. And I don't know. Are there some people that are this way?
We have dealt with this problem on the program before, and Zorba has the perfect answers for you.
We've dealt with this problem before.
We have.
We dealt with it. I would recommend forgetting the wife, forgetting the kids, and just be surrounded by guys. Guys don't care about gas. Women care about gas. Guys do not care about gas on the whole. I mean, they're just around gas, you know, passing gas all the time, and you know, it is an interesting issue in that some people clearly produce more gas. Has this been a lifelong problem?
You know, I mean, certainly for the last number of years, yeah. I don't know about lifelong as a child, but yeah,
okay.
Certainly my adult years.
Have you tried Beano?
I have.
And what? Tell me about it.
Honestly, I don't notice that much of a difference. And same thing with a product called GasX.
Okay. Yeah, GasX is sort of the other thing, which is activated charcoal.
Yes.
Have you also tried Prilosec? Prilosec is for it's basically an H2 blocker. It blocks acid in the stomach. Have you tried that?
No, I haven't.
I would try Prilosec for a couple of weeks, see if that did it, and if not, Prilosec 20 milligrams daily. That's the dose. I do it for 1 to 2 weeks. If not, I'd go up to 40 milligrams. See if it makes a difference. And if that doesn't work, I would try Zantac 300 milligrams once or twice a day. And that's
okay.
Over the counter now without a prescription. And the reason why I would try both of those is they will change the acid that you are producing in your stomach. And the acid may be part of the issue that's going down the gut that's producing the gas. Those are the things I would try. I would also try Simethicone, S-I-M-E-T-H, I think it's E-C-O-N-E. They come in a tablet form, Mylacon. Is the name of the antacid that has Simethicone. And I would try that too because these are all things. Do you chew gum?
Very rarely.
Okay, because gum will cause it. Do you drink a lot of soda?
One or two a day.
Okay. Drop the soda. Soda can be an issue. How much caffeine do you drink? Do you have in your diet?
A couple coffees in the morning, okay. And then a couple of sodas a day.
Okay. So I would try to reduce or disrupt the caffeine to your diet to see if that works. Now, if that doesn't work, my final recommendation are earplugs given out to the entire family when they're around you in the house. So they can't hear you passing the gas.
Yeah, but that's not the big problem.
Yeah, I don't think it's an oral issue for them.
Yes,
audio.
Yes, that's it. That's it. But those are the ways. Reducing some of the acid and the digestive juices, frankly, may make a difference. Frankly, roughage is part of the issue. The more roughage you have, the more gas you're going to have a tendency to have.
So did I tell you he was going to give you a lot of help here on this?
Absolutely.
And did he?
Yes, we'll definitely try the Prilosec and or the Zantac.
Okay,
you know, I must tell you though, this is such an issue, especially with people as they get older. Older adults, they have a big issue, especially older women, because often the sphincter, the anal sphincter, becomes less tone, doesn't have the same tone among older people, men and women, and so they pass more gas than they did before because they can't hold it back because of their anal sphincter, and it's big issue with women who were, quote, brought up properly.
Yeah.
So it's an issue. I always thought I could make millions of dollars by giving, you know, by having anti-gas training sessions, you know, and I don't think
you could make millions of dollars.
Absolutely. I could have a website. No. I could have a little advertisement in ARP, the magazine, you know, for people, you know, have an anti-gas training.
Maybe you could. Who knows what people would
pay. Oh, I think there's a missing part here. I think that there's a missing part.
Anyway, thanks for the call.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Hope we helped. Do you mind, Zorba, if we change the topic?
Not at all. Getting away from gas is okay.
Let's grab a quick question from the Zorba Pastor on your health inbox and help out Bertha from Wichita, Kansas. Bertha would like to know, what's the best meal to eat the night before a sporting event, say like a soccer game? She once believed it was spaghetti, but now has heard that she shouldn't serve that. What do you think?
Well, you know, that has been the traditional thing to serve, and frankly, it still is an okay and a great thing to serve. The idea is that you produce glycogen in your liver. Glycogen is what we use for fast energy. Okay, mm-hmm. We've depleted the energy. We're on the soccer field. Well, I'm not on the soccer field, but my kids are on the soccer field. They're running around, and all of a sudden, we need to have all of this. We need to basically be able to run and to be able to move around. And so what we need is glycogen, and that's in storage in the liver. And if you have enough carbohydrates the day before, the idea is that you make sure you have enough storage of glycogen, which you get from sugar and carbs. And so my recommendation is still the same as the coach's recommendation, which is that spaghetti and basically pasta and breads are good things to have before the game, the evening before the game, and I think that's still a great idea.
Well, there's no special meal you should eat the night before you send us your email. Just send it to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Lots more coming up for you here, including our medical myth buster on motion sickness, some more interesting research, more of your calls, too, on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Question for Zorba? You can call us now at 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, something else to worry about, CT scans.
Right, and the overuse of CT scans, and it is, I think, something that we really should worry about. I mean, the information clearly shows that the average American's total body radiation, in other words, we look at the country, we look at the number of CT scans that are performed in x-rays, it's doubled since 1980. So we're getting twice as much radiation from diagnostic tests than we have since 1980, and we know the more often we get radiation and the more radiation we get, the greater the risk that we are going to have cancer.
There's been a study on this.
There's a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine looking at the number of CT scans that are performed, and it's increased dramatically, not only among adults, but among children, too. And let's put this into perspective. The CAT scan of the chest, okay, CAT scan of the chest, where you're looking at the chest, we'll say, for different tumors and so on, involves 10 to 15 units versus 0.01 to 0.15 units of the same radiation if we do a chest x-ray. So it involves 10 times as much radiation when we do a CAT scan of the chest versus a chest x-ray.
How harmful is this?
Well, theoretically, we know that the more radiation we give, the more likely we are to have cancers, especially leukemia and lymphomas that may come from radiation. And the real issue is, in long-term studies have not been done because CT scans have not been around that long. And the fact is, especially with children and young adults, 10 or 20 years later, we may find that we're causing cancers. And I'll give you the perfect example. Back in the 50s and 60s, we gave x-rays for acne. It's a very effective treatment, something called soft x-rays for acne, and we stopped giving it because we were causing thyroid cancer.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
this is not treated the right way.
But the problem is these CT scans do save lives.
Well, they do save lives, and they're useful, but the estimation in the New England Journal of Medicine study is that one-third of the scans are unnecessary. In other words, we've done it willy-nilly because it's cheaper, and it's cheaper, for instance, than an MRI scan. And by the way, MRI scans are totally different. That uses a magnet. It does not involve radiation. It has, at this point, we believe it to be much safer than a CAT scan. But CAT scans have become cheap, and people get total body CAT scans without thinking about it. And they pay for them. They're a couple of $100 looking for cancer, and they cause lots of problems, and they may cause cancer in and of themselves.
This is a problem for people, a problem for doctors, too.
Absolutely. The real issue is if you go to your doctor and your doctor says, I recommend a CAT scan, you say, is that really necessary? And it's important for doctors to look at every single CAT scan and say, if it's necessary, do it, and if it's not, don't.
800-462-7413, toll free. Let's welcome a listener now, Zorba, in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Hi.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm great.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a question for Dr. Zorba concerning psoriasis, which is something I... seems to be eating me alive. It started about 6 months ago, and I'm wanting to know what the cause of it is. I've gone to the doctor a few times and got different soaps and salves, and they do control it to a certain degree, but if I miss a day or two, it comes back just as voracious as ever. Something's causing it, and I just don't know what it is, and I'm hoping that Dr. Zorba might help me there.
Well, psoriasis is, it's a chronic disease. It's a major problem. And the first step with anyone with treatment for psoriasis is having a good relationship with a doctor who you trust and think is good. Tell me a bit about your doctor. How long have you been going to this dermatologist? I assume it's a dermatologist, right?
Well, actually, no, it's a family doctor.
That's your first. Well, I don't want to say it's your first mistake because I'm a family doctor. And it's not. It's not.
Never go to the family doctor.
Never. I mean, that would be a big mistake. Never go to the family doctor, and I do that every day. But the reality is, we family doctors treat minimal psoriasis. There's a lot of little psoriasis around there. And when I say little, it's a patch of psoriasis either on the elbows or it's a patch on the knees or maybe it's a patch a little bit on the neck. There's some areas and we treat it, but we have to know where our expertise ends. And generally, there are certain creams that you can use, steroid creams and other newer non-steroid creams, tar shampoos, for instance, in the scalp and so on. But when it gets to the point where it's coming back, you really need a dermatologist. And the reason is they have other tricks. There are boxes that are used, which are essentially, these are light boxes that use UV type of light. There are other medications that are also used. There's a drug called methotrexate, which is a drug that's used for cancer. It's also used as an anti-inflammatory drug, and it's used for psoriasis. And there are a variety of other drugs that are used. How long have you been suffering with this?
Well, it appeared as redness about 7 months ago and then turned into a small patch on my ankle, and it's just slowly spreading now up my leg and itches like fire.
And it itches like fire. So I recommend a dermatology consult. That's what you need. There's no doubt in my mind when the tricks that I have, when my bag of tricks you know, are no longer working, then I send you to somebody else. What kind of a town do you live in? How is there a dermatologist in your town?
It's a small town. It's a little mountain town in northwest Arkansas. I'd have to probably go to Little Rock or something.
Okay,
like
Little
that.
Rock. Little Rock has some great medical care, absolutely great medical care. I'd ask your doctor who your doctor would recommend it as a dermatologist, you know, for a dermatologist. And if not, sometimes that's the best way to get the recommendation is somebody you trust. Your doctor would be good. Do you like your doctor? Is your doctor good?
Yes, he's good.
Okay, so I'd ask him. I'd say, look, I'm not getting any better. I want to see a dermatologist. I'm sure that he or she has a dermatologist that they like, and that's what you need. You need a relationship. It's a longstanding thing, and that's what I'd go for.
Well, Dr. Zorba, thank you.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. 800-462-7413. Time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. Our myth today deals with a common cure for motion sickness. It's long been thought that ginger seems to be the most effective treatment for motion sickness. But is it really?
Well, that depends. If we look at the most effective treatment for motion sickness, it's clearly not ginger. I mean, the most effective treatment is basically getting a drug called meclizine, which you can get over the counter, and something called Bonine, or to have the scopolamine patch. Those are very effective. But
does ginger work at all?
From a natural point of view, it appears that ginger has some effect. And there are a couple of studies that I was able to glean out. A study from The Lancet looked at 36 people highly susceptible to motion sickness. They took two capsules of powdered ginger or a placebo. 20 minutes later, they spun them in a motorized chair for 6 minutes. Can you picture that?
There's some research for you.
There's some research. They spun them in a chair for 6 minutes to see if they had motion sickness. I bet they paid these people big bucks to actually do that. And they found out.
Probably college kids.
That's, again, it was probably part of the fact that they had to get their degree in psychology
right.
or something. But they found that taking ginger delayed the onset of motion sickness about twice as long as those having the placebo. So in other words, it seemed to have some effect. Then another study, a Danish study of 80 naval cadets prone to seasickness, found that when they were given 1 gram of ginger powder, they suffered less motion sickness than when they were given a placebo. So I think it's a natural alternative. It's good for people who are highly susceptible, and they don't want to take meclizine or scopolamine. And those drugs have side effects of sleepiness. I tend to get seasick sometimes, so I'll take them, but I don't like the seasickness feeling. I would recommend ginger 1 gram an hour before you actually go out. Oh, and don't forget, antihistamines also work, such as Dramamine.
Interesting. Now, what exactly is it about ginger that helps with seasickness?
I don't know. Ask Fred Astaire and he'll tell you.
Do you have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a caller with us now in Laredo, Texas. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
We appreciate it. What's up?
Well, I've been suffering with scar tissue underneath the skin, and I've been taking a drug called Alkylate, but it doesn't seem to be helping. And I was just wondering if there is something else I can do or something I could take or maybe something natural I can get over the counter. I mean, anything at this point.
Hmm. So you've got scar tissue under your skin.
Yes.
What does your doctor say the scar tissue is?
Well, I know what it is. I had breast augmentation, and I got scar tissue because of it.
Okay. So, and that is one of the side effects of breast augmentation. How long have you had the scar tissue?
About 3 months now.
3 months. And when did you get the breast augmentation?
About 4 months.
Okay. Now, have you talked to the doctor who did the surgery?
And he put me on Alkylate.
They put you on Alkylate. Is that a prescription drug? I'm not familiar with it. Or is it, it's a prescription drug. Okay. Has that done anything for you at all?
No.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm not familiar with that drug, but one of the problems when you have either breast reduction or breast augmentation is scar tissue that can form. And one of the things you want to evaluate is whether or not this is A, scar tissue, or B, a collection or pocket of blood that might be a clot. Because sometimes a side effect of surgery, especially if you're only 12, 16 weeks away from the surgery, is you may have a blood clot that is there, and what feels like firm scar tissue may not actually be scar tissue or a blood clot. So for some people, they have to have an ultrasound or ultrasound of the breast to see whether or not it's solid or fluid filled. Because if it's fluid filled, you do one thing, you actually go in and remove the clot. And if it's not fluid filled, then you don't. So I would recommend you call your doc back up and you basically have this imaged, we call it, to see exactly what is happening with that. I don't know of any topical thing that you could use on this, such as vitamin E, which a lot of people will often use for scar tissue. So I think it's important to go back and say, what is this scar tissue from, and get an evaluation to then determine the right treatment. That's what I would recommend.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure. You take care.
We appreciate the call. Thank you very much. And Zorba, before we get out of here, it's time to pay a small citation to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health grammar. Please?
Oh, the grammar, please. Dum, ba-da-dum. You know, we need to have some sort of a musical cue for the grammar,
please. I'd just soon get over it and not call attention to it. Maybe read it very quickly. This one is more just a helpful hint, and it comes to us from Linda, who is formerly of the Boston area. You got that?
I got it.
Okay. From time to time, Zorba, we mention medical research based on an accredited Framingham study?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Well, as a former New Englander, Linda would like us to know that this Boston suburb is actually pronounced Framingham.
Oh, my gosh. You mean I've been pronouncing Framingham
for
wrong
years.
All of these
for
years?
For years.
And it's Framingham?
Framingham.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I can't believe it. I wonder why no one else has ever called up to tell me that. It's the Framingham study.
Well,
I stand
most
corrected.
Of our listeners,
it's an A. Framingham versus Framingham.
Most of our listeners are a lot more polite than Linda is.
There we go. Linda, thank you, but you're not polite. Thanks for correcting me, though. I appreciate that. It's the Framingham Art Study. Now I've got it.
And I thank you, too, Linda. You can let us know your thoughts or the proper way to pronounce cities by sending us an email to
Zorba at WPR.org.
And Zorba, we'll see you next week.
A pleasure to be here, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web.
ZorbaPastor.org.
Call day or night with your question for Zorba at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director, and Charles Monroe Kane is our executive producer. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us too for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
National support for Zorba Pastor on Your Health comes from the AED Superstore, helping people save lives with Philips HeartStart automated external defibrillators for business, school, travel, and home. Available at AEDSuperstore.com. Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1227Z.
PRI, Public Radio International.